Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the 16mm Film Crew. I'm Cindy.
And I'm Dale.
You can watch us on YouTube. You can like and comment on our YouTube videos and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can listen to us everywhere podcasts are found at 16mm Film Crew Podcast. Leave us a rating review. And visit us on our website at www.16mmfilmcrew.com. Okay, so this week we watched Dune Part 2, directed by Denis Villeneuve. Here's your synopsis. Paul Atreides unites with Chani and the Fremen while seeking revenge against the conspirators who destroyed his family. Facing a choice between the love of his life and the fate of the universe, he must prevent a terrible future only he can foresee. This movie stars Timothy Chalamet, Zendaya, Austin Butler, Florence Pugh, Javier Bardem, Rebecca Ferguson, Josh Brolin, Christopher Walken, Stellan Skarsgård, Lea Seydoux, Dave Bautista, and Anya Taylor-Joy. So, Dale, tell us about your thoughts on this movie, but also about your movie-going experience watching this.
I mean, my local theaters are like playing it like a couple days early. So I got to see it without a rush. Even though I did go to a matinee, I did also see it without a large rush, because I think most theaters have it coming out past Friday. So when I saw it during the week, my theater was wonderfully empty. I could sit wherever I want, even though I paid for a ticket. I love it. Denis Villeneuve, it's weird. I do like it because Denis Villeneuve is one of the few directors other than, James Cameron and probably Christopher Nolan, who they know how to use scope. They have a large sense of scope with their project, where it's not just the actors, but the scenes and settings and locations are characters in their pictures as well. And this is one of the movies that made me realize probably Timothée Chalamet is a much better actor than a lot of people give him credit to. Like, I've had that opinion since watching him in The King on Netflix a couple years ago, but that's not a movie that everybody watched, you know? We mostly know him from basically Wonka and stuff like that, lighter fare, not the more serious aspects of his... I'm talking about not us, but the mass people, the masses.
Oh, maybe.
You know? So it's different. We're going to watch the kind of stuff he's in. So, it really showcased his reign as an actor, not just him, but I thought the same thing as Zendaya as well. You know, her playing Mary Jane in the Spider-Man picture, she doesn't really get pretty much to flex her wealth of acting. You know, people mostly know her A from Spider-Man and her stuff in Disney. Like, she had her own action sequences in this movie. You know, she was playing sensitive, serious, tough, like a well-rounded character, a well-rounded delivery of emotions that very few actresses also get the opportunity to play. But my biggest issue, and this is part of what the movie's about and Dune itself is about, is a topic of colonialism. This movie features a lot of reference to Arabic cultures and religions. But part of my critique is those things aren't showcased in the talent. Like, the talent and a lot of the cast don't really represent that culture as well. And this movie, and you don't notice it much in the first part, in Dune 1, but in this one, where they're spending more time with the Fremen, you really notice a lot more the Arabic and Muslim influences in the character's garb and also the religion aspects of it as well.
Well, for me, I saw this in a big IMAX theater with a lot of people. It was packed, which I love. Like, I feel like there are certain movies that like warrant audience experiences. Like you want other people to be there to be with you on that journey. So I was happy that there were a lot of people there, because this is, you know, it's based on a book, but it still feels kind of original in its own way because it's been so hard to adapt before. And it's also like science fiction-y and weird. So it's like really nice to see people come out for a movie like this. And I feel like I really missed out on not seeing the first one in IMAX, because seeing it in IMAX really, like, you really get the full effect of like what everything is supposed to sound like. Like, even when they use the voice, I never heard the voice use as it is in IMAX, because I didn't watch the first movie in an IMAX theater. I just watched it in a regular theater. So the voice is supposed to sound a specific way. So when you hear it in IMAX, it's like crazy. When you hear the thumping, when they're trying to call those sandworms, like it all has such a powerful effect, which is great. So that was a great experience of just like experiencing like what everything's supposed to sound like and what everything's supposed to look like as the filmmakers intended it, I think. So that was nice. I really enjoyed the movie. I am like looking at other people's reviews because I'm nosy. And it's funny because it's like everyone is very passionate about this film. They're like, it's perfect. And I don't know about that. But I do think it's very, very good. Like, I think that this was like perfect follow-up to the first one. It doesn't even feel like it's two different movies. It seems like one movie is just literally broken up into two pieces. And the second part, like this movie really builds on the first one in a way that makes it better. Like, I think that I enjoyed this one more than I enjoyed the first one just because of the world building. Like, to me, that's why I love this story. Like, I've read the books and I obviously watch the movie, but like, that's because there's so many derivatives of this story, like Star Wars, Game of Thrones. That's the thing that I like about those shows and films is the world building. Like, you get to go to other places and see different cultures and stuff. Like, that is what I love about those stories. So like, to see that in this one, I feel like that's what it was missing in the first piece for me. A lot of people were like, oh, the action is missing. We want more action. And the action was great. But for me, it's like world building, politicking, like that's the stuff that I'm more interested in. So like, we got a lot more of that. I feel like in the third one, if they make a third one, that'll probably be the best one because that'll be more of like the nuancey kind of like we're getting into like how things, the structure and the government and stuff like that. And like, I like that. So that'll probably be more for me, but this one was really good. This one was very good. I really enjoyed it. In terms of like the performances, first of all, the cast is stacked. It was from the beginning, but it is more now. Like, some of the best young talent is in this movie. And I'm happy to see it. I love to see it. Timothée Chalamet has always been a good actor to me. Like, I don't know. People were like, oh, we didn't know that you could do this. And I'm like, you guys aren't paying attention. But I'm not even a Timothée stan anymore. But like, he did his thing with this role. Like, and you can see that he could actually like really grew up with it. Like, in the first one, he's some kind of more timid and trying to find his footing. And in this one, he seems much more confident. And he also looks a little bit older. So it like very much follows the arc of the actual character in the movie, his own development. So like, he really looked cool. Like, I believed that he was in charge of the situation. So like, I thought he did an amazing job. And it's a very complex character because it's like, he's kind of lying to all of these people. And then he believes the lie, but then the lie kind of becomes the truth. It's very complicated, but I think he did a really good job at hitting all of those beats and making all of those transitions believable. I wanted more Florence Pugh. I was sad that she wasn't in this more, but I understand why, because of the story. Yeah. Like, she's just not in that. She's just not in it that much, but I wanted more Florence. Rebecca Ferguson, I feel like everyone's talking about other people, and fair, like, everyone did a great job in this, but Rebecca Ferguson, to me, is always one of the best performances. Like, she is an amazing actress. I said this last year. I mean, the first time Dune came out, I said she deserved an Oscar nomination. And I still stand by that. This performance was amazing. She is on another level. Like, more love for Rebecca Ferguson, please. Like, I think she's fantastic. My favorite performance, however, was Austin Butler. I'm sorry. Like, Austin Butler ate this. Like, he ate this role down. Like, he was the best part of this movie for me. Sorry. He was the best part of everything that happened on the Harkonnen planet, Giedi Prime. Mm-hmm. That stuff was the best stuff. Like, in my opinion. Also, just like the way it looks, because it looks so starkly different than what we are seeing from Dune. Like, That was the best part. Like, it was the best part. He was so good in this role. You can tell that he's really having fun with it. And also, like, someone else said this, but, like, how he uses his voice, like, whether he's playing Elvis or this role, like, he really knows how to manipulate his voice in a way where it's, like, he can, like, really shape-shift and just through, like, his vocals. Like, it's really impressive. Like, he is one of our best actors. Like, I'm sorry, he is. And for Zendaya, I feel like Zendaya did a lot. I feel like she had more room to do more stuff with this role because her role was expanded. Not only in the movie, but, like, even in the book, it's not as deep as mm-hmm. it is in this, in the movie. Like, they gave her a lot more stuff to do in this, which I think is good. I don't know. I feel like Zendaya is, like, not a, I don't know how to explain how I feel about her acting or her choices. I feel like with Zendaya, you kind of know what you're going to get. I guess that's just from, like, watching her in different things. Like, Euphoria, Malcolm and Marie, like, mm-hmm. Spider-Man, whatever. Like, it's, like, I know what I'm going to get when I see Zendaya's performance. And it's going to be really, like, some of it's going to be kind of harsh in terms of, like, she's going to be mad for a good deal of it, or she's going to be sad. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I don't know what to say about that, because I don't know. Yeah, I just, I can't wrap my head around how I feel about it yet, so I'm just not going to talk about it anymore. But I think that everybody did a great job in terms of the performances. So,
and I kind of do feel Zendaya thing. I do think she does make a good choice in the character she plays. I think as an actress, she's actually very good at emoting. That she's like, and that's the thing for me. I love when actors can express with their face, whether it's subdued or not. Awesome, but I don't know. I still kept hearing Elvis, even when he was doing the Harkonnen voice. I was still hearing, like, oh, this is just evil Elvis. The whole, huh?
Did you even watch?
It's a, you think I'm not gonna watch a Baz Luhrmann movie? Come on. But it still felt like evil Elvis in a way. But yeah, I still had a wonderful, wonderful time with the movie. Like you mentioned, like Rebecca Ferguson, yeah, she's a very underrated actress. You know, keying into the things I mentioned initially with the whole Arabic and how this one is more focused on the religion and kind of the subplot point of it being about colonialism and the corruption of religion, how people weaponize it. I think she played a wonderful villain, overshadowing what's his name? What's the Skarsgård? What's the his name? Who plays like Lord Harkonnen? Huh?
Oh, the Baron.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that she does overshadow him. And I do, you mentioned it about the color contrast when they're on the Harkonnen's home world compared to Arrakis. Even though Arrakis is very much a desert, there's still color in it. And I love the fact that the Harkonnen home world they shot, it's basically like black and white kind of infrared stuff showcasing the stark contrast or the villainy at that time of the Harkonnens as well.
Yeah, I just loved all of that stuff because it's like, there's so much more to like explore in that. So I guess one of my main things was like, I really wish that this was a TV show. And I don't mean like,
yeah,
a Friends type of thing where you get like a billion seasons and like 25 episodes. Like, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about like prestige television, like the stuff that you would watch on HBO. They have a show coming out about Dune later this year. But I mean like, the actual, like, this actual story. Because I feel like you would have so much more time to really explore all of the different dynamics in all the different houses and stuff. Because there was a show that they made back in the day of Dune, but I don't know what happened to that. I guess it wasn't good or something. But one of the issues I did have with this movie was the pacing. I just felt like some parts were super rushed. And so because we had to hurry up and get to the next thing, we weren't able to kind of like really get into like what was going on. Like at one point, the Bene Gesserit are talking about the fact that Fade Ralpha killed his mother, and then they just skipped over. I was like, excuse me, can we get some more information about that? Like, what happened? Like, how did this happen? And just exploring his mindset of like why he loves pain and all this other stuff. Like, there is stuff to explore here, and I don't know. I just feel like there's a lot to unpack in this story. And I feel like a television series would actually be a better fit of like understanding the world. I understand like on film, like Denis trying to do his Star Wars thing. He wants his trilogy. Like, that makes a whole bunch of sense. Everyone is like, this is our new Star Wars. Well, not everyone, but you know, young people who haven't seen Star Wars. They're like, this is our Star Wars. We feel like this is our moment to be a part of something that's like very culturally important. And that's fantastic. Like, I'm really happy that this story is touching people in that way. But I also feel like in terms of exploring like all of the themes and all of the different stuff that happens in this world, you just need more time. And the only medium that provides you that is television. So I kind of wish that we had more time to just deal with other elements in the story better. And also another issue I had was the writing. Now, mm-hmm. This is a really good story. And also, if you listen to the audiobook, like the audiobook performance, like the actors and everyone who does that, they're fantastic. Like, it's a great thing just to listen to. But the writing is tough for me. And it was tough for me in the first one, but I think I overlooked it because everything else was amazing. This one, I really felt it. I was like, okay, so I can't. Like, so much of this is expository dialogue. Like, they're telling you literally everything that's happening. And I just don't like that. I feel like I feel like now there is no reason for you to do something like that, just because it's like, show don't tell, like that's always the rules. And I get it that people are coming to it who haven't read the book and who don't know the story. Like, I totally understand that they might not get it. Now, they might not get everything, but to have everything kind of spelled out to you is just not good storytelling, in my opinion. I just feel like the writing was like the weakest part of this, because it's like, we can understand certain things if you just show it to us. Like, we're not that dumb. Like, we might not get all of the references and all of the plot points that were in the book. Like, we might not understand everything, but we'll get the general gist if you just, you know, show us through action. So, like, that kind of brought this down for me, I'm gonna be honest.
Yeah, no, I agree. I feel like this probably would have been better served, like, and I don't want to say HBO, because HBO has Game of Thrones and stuff like that, but that's honestly probably why this picture in this movie got greenlit, you know, to compete against that. It probably would have done better as a series. We see those ramifications of many productions and trying to compete with the success of Game of Thrones, because now they're rewriting the Avatar series, which that's an issue in itself, to match tone-wise to attract a certain audience like Game of Thrones. But I do think this particular property meshes well with it, very minimal adaptation. And there, like you said, there's a lot of subtext and a lot of action going on in the books that are not featured in this project. This is one of those book-to-film adaptations, I think, that glosses over a lot of details, a lot of backstory. Mm. Like, as much flack as we do give her, with being an evil person. I'm just not even going to detail, but J.K. Rowling, the team that was actually making those movies at Warner Brothers, put a lot of detail from the books into the movies, and I think that's part of why people still gravitate to those movies to this day. There are some things I wish we also spent a little bit more time with Rebecca Ferguson's character. Because we discover late that she's a Harkonnen and stuff like that. I want to know the process as to, you know, how she transitioned from being his granddaughter to, you know, being a Bene Gesserit, and then from there becoming, you know, the queen of,
She's the Reverend Mother.
Not the Reverend Mother. I'm talking about how when she married Paul's father, like becoming like a queen, and then now becoming, you know, the Reverend Mother. Because that's a lot of character development and growth that we don't get to, you know, see, you know, play out. So yeah,
I feel like there are so many elements, and someone else was saying this too, that like this is Hollywood's version of the story. Like, you're not gonna get like all of the nuanced stuff, which is sad to me because that's what makes the books good. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what makes it good. Like, Jessica is the most interesting character in the books. Like, well, at least in the first like two. So the fact that she is kind of regulated to a side character is kind of not strange, because like Paul is our main, like he is our protagonist. It's just that there's so much, like I said, there's just so much to explore there. And I feel like television is just a better medium of getting that out. But in terms of like the story line, like the plot lines and stuff, I was wondering like what, because a constant complaint about this film is that it's like a white savior story, yeah. Right? And at first I was like, and yeah, I see what you're talking about. I think they're trying to be cautionary about it. Like, don't fall into this trope. I feel like the third book actually gets, or the second book, sorry. I keep thinking that there's two movies from the first book, and then it's a second book that they still haven't done yet, which will be the third movie. But in the second book, I feel like that whole white savior thing is explored a lot more and in better detail. It's just that like that movie hasn't come out yet. They haven't made that one yet. So I think they're trying to like pepper in things, because like Paul knows that like the only reason why he's with the Fremen is because he wants to use them to get revenge on the Emperor. Yeah. But then he falls in love with Chani and actually starts to care about the Fremen people. And then because he knows that, you know, the fundamentalists like already are looking for a prophet, they already are obsessed with him, he doesn't want to go south. But then he goes south anyways, because he just decides like, yeah, like my path is, I know it's not going to be good, but like I have to do it. Like if not me, then who, kind of type of thing. And it's like, okay, so what does that mean? So does that mean that like the Bene Gesserit obviously put the idea of a prophet in these people's minds to control them? And then everyone, most people know it. Like Paul knows it, his mom knows it, Chani and her people know it. And then he believes it, his mother believes it. And then because of that belief, it actually ends up happening where he is able to see through time and control all of these different things. So is it a lie, or is it just a self, what is it? A self something prophecy, a self-fulfilling prophecy? I don't know. I'm so confused on that.
Yeah. It's okay. That's my, I thought you were going to continue. So that's why I was like, look, people, if you listen to this, it's we're recording via video, so it's kind of issues. But yeah, no, I and that's one of the things that I wanted to delve more into, that issue, how they, and at the core, it's not even like the Emperor more so wanted power, it was more so the Bene Gesserit, the nuns plotted. And stuff, they plotted there, said, yeah, no, they basically told the princess when she was asking, it's like, oh, you guys are gonna stand by, let's watch, like, oh, this is what we do, we're the ones in power, we told your father, and he did the dirty work for us. And then, you know, with Austin Butler's character, he's their appointed replacement in case Paul fails, you know, he's predestined to, like, oh, if Paul fails, you're the next person up, we're going to control and so on and so forth, because they kind of see, due to, you know, from the first movie, you kind of see that Paul's mother, Rebecca Ferguson's character, is not 100% on the side of the Bene Gesserits the whole way until, you know, her husband and all the whole House of Atreides is killed. And then you see her kind of focusing more on, you know, making sure Paul survives and getting revenge. And then you kind of see her come to this, you know, villainous, very Maleficent, yeah, like character, using her powers and would be to not just push Paul along that path, but also a lot of the more the fundamentalist people. And I think that's also another key point in this movie, is colonialism, how religion is weaponized, but also in the movie there also is a very clear divide on how generations view religion and politics. You see, like, the older generation, Xavier Bardem's character, you know, they're like, no, this is what we have to do. And then you have Shanti and all the other younger Fremen soldiers, whether it's north or south. Predominantly, a lot of the younger ones are on the north side, not agreeing with that stance. So you see a lot of those. I think that world-building aspect of the Dune universe, where it encapsulates so many real life webs and entanglements, nothing is like, usually most of these movies only hit on one topics, but very much like in real life, all these topics kind of blend and interact with each other. And I'm so thankful that Denny has also brought that to life in the movies as well.
Yeah, that's one that was very impressive to me, that he showed that there was diversity even within the Fremen. Like, not everyone believes the same thing, and not everyone has the same ideas of what needs to happen. So, like, I thought that was really good to just showcase how different people act. Like, I thought that was really good. But yeah, I think that the trouble that Dune probably runs into is the fact that they're trying to depict a cautionary tale of, like, having this white savior trope of this person who isn't native to the land coming in and saving the day. But the thing is that they haven't shown the downfall of that yet. So yeah, for the people who are watching just these movies who haven't read the books or anything, like, they're going to think that that's exactly what the story is, because it kind of feeds into that. You know, Paul resists, and then eventually he becomes Muad'Dib. He becomes the savior of these people. And these are people of color. Like, most of all of the Fremen are people of color. And he is the white man from another planet who comes to save everyone. And I also like that in Chani's character, they try to show that resist of, like, I respect you, but I don't like you like that, because you kind of represent everything that I hate. And them falling in love, what does that mean? You know, it kind of plays into the tropes that it's trying to avoid, but that's only because we haven't seen the downfall of that. And also just showing, like, what, how such a small amount of people dictate, like, mass amounts of people's lives through this trying to, like, reap the spice from the earth. And also, like, just having this huge war that's about to break out. Like, we could see that depicted in our real lives. Just turn on the mm-hmm. news. So the themes are very on point, which mm-hmm. is why the book is so good. And I think that's why these movies are so good. Again, it's just more like, can we spend some more time with it? And also, like, we're going to have to wait to see the downfall of these decisions.
Yeah.
At least on screen.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's time for, you know, I mentioned them a bit before, my critiques with it. It lies with the fact that, like I said before, a lot of this movie is very Arabic and Muslim coded. And I guess in the Fremen, you know, Sub-Saharan Middle Eastern cultures is a big mix of cultures. I saw a lot of darker skinned Fremen and all that stuff like that. But I do wish that the key cast members, you know, Xavier Bardem and, you know, Zendaya, you know, they were actually people of those descents in that region. Because the movie does have, and especially, like, it's done on purpose, the jarring scene of Rebecca Ferguson in a, basically what is a hijab almost, you know, and she has a makeup on her face. That is one of the aspects of colonialism and how they kind of bastardize people's religions. But then you have, which I don't think was necessary, Anna Taylor-Joy, like, I don't, she didn't have to be in the movie. Like, you could have got anybody else to do a voiceover. It's whatever. I think she showed up on the red carpet with a makeshift hijab-style dress when, you know, we're currently dealing with issues in this country of women being allowed to still wear those garments. And the scene that particularly sticks out to me the most would be when the Harkonnens are bombing the holy site. You know, we spoke about this last week, talking about Zone of Interest and how it kind of pushed to the forefront, not the forefront, but the entertainment side of issues we're dealing with today. Like, we've been witnessing weekly bombardments of Israel bombarding Gaza, and now we have a movie featuring that scene, you know, which is borrowing aspects from people of that region in that culture, and we see that being played out in our entertainment in a way. I don't know. I feel kind of iffy about that, but yeah, I do, and that's probably my biggest issue is that it is leaning so much into that, speaking Farsi and speaking Arabic, and then not featuring those faces prominently in your picture. Yeah.
Well, I think that. Well, one, I do agree that it is very, like, Middle Eastern coded. And I think that was the point. I think that even in the book, like, how it was written, Frank Herbert was writing about the things that he was seeing at the time when he was writing it. And,
yeah,
you know, again, that Israel-Palestine conflict has been going on for decades. I think he wrote this in the 60s. It was happening then. So it's like, maybe that's what he was seeing and that's what was being reflected in the book. And then obviously in the movie, I think that also, like, it's a made up language. Like, it's not, they're not like speaking Arabic, but if you look at the costumes and the setting and everything, it is very easy to be like, well, that's what they're trying to say. And to a certain degree, yeah, it is. That is what they're trying to say. And how especially Western countries have gone to the Middle East and exploited gas and oil and all this other stuff from it. And also just like created absolute chaos in that region, which has unfortunately not stopped for decades now. So, you know, art and life, it is very reflective. All about Anya Taylor-Joy. Because she's not supposed to be like Fremen or anything. Like, that's Jessica and Duke Leto's baby. So, like, she's gonna be white. Yeah. But I didn't know about like how she was dressing. I know what she was wearing.
Well, on the red carpet.
I know, on the red carpet. Yeah, I was checking. That's the best part about these movies is looking at the fashion. But yes, I did see what she was wearing. I hope it wasn't intentionally trying to do, you know, culturally appropriate anything. I hope not, but I guess we'll never know. But yeah, so I feel it like it is incredibly poignant to be watching this movie now just because of like what is happening and what we're seeing. But I think the themes and what he was trying to get at was written, you know, decades ago. And unfortunately, it is still relevant. So I guess it's just how you choose to depict it. Because I feel like if you are respectful of the history and like what's going on in present day, it'll feel different to the audience members. But honestly, if you do feel some type of way about it, I feel like that's just what it is. Because it's like, yeah. We're seeing it happening in the news and we're seeing it in your movie. So it feels a little too close to home, you know, and it feels a little uncomfortable. So I get it.
Yeah.
Um, And yeah, just want to shout out the cinematography, Greg Fraser, another stunning job. There are so many scenes in this that are just like perfect. Like they look perfect. The fight scene at the end where it's like the sun is setting. Oof. Chills, but also just like not only them, but the production design, the visual effects department, like everybody working at the top of their game, wardrobe, hair, makeup, like everyone looked amazing and like accurate to like where they're supposed to be and like what the settings are supposed to be. Like everything just looked so good. And the music by Hans Zimmer, beautiful. Okay. Like, again, it's like you got the best people working on your film. So it's like, it's gonna look great. I feel like Denis did such a great job of just like managing all of this stuff. Like he's one of those directors, like you said earlier, who really knows how to work on this scale and has really proven himself as like an auteur and like a really good, like he knows what to do in this situation. Like a very much like a Chris Nolan where it's like, you can trust that like whatever Chris is gonna put out is gonna look sound and like feel amazing. And I feel like Denis is very much in that same conversation.
Yeah, and it's clear that Warner Brothers, you know, and we mentioned, you know, a while ago, Denis and Chris Nolan, you know, this is a Legendary Pictures, you know, helped produce this. You know, they've worked a lot with, of course, what Nolan and his projects and stuff like that. And it's clear that even in the midst of all their stupidity, Warner Brothers had complete faith in Denis to let him create his own vision, which I want them to continue that with their other projects, man. I really wish they would let them do that, you know, but powers that be at Warner Brothers are stupid right now. But yeah, I kind of want to go, I'm going to probably spend tonight, or we're recording on a Sunday, which is weird for us, but I'm probably going to, you know, probably tonight, rewatch the first one and then probably see if I can sneak a early morning matinee and rewatch this one, you know, before I actually have to start work in about before 10 o'clock, but we'll see how that goes. But yeah, I really am loving, this is like my first experience with like Dune, you know, like I've reading the books do through the movies now. But yeah, I'm enjoying it. I can't wait for the next film.
Yeah. I watched the first one the night before I watched this one, and it does feel nice to watch it as one thing. I feel like it really should be watched as like one kind of film. But I just feel like this one was so much more expansive and detailed, and I don't know. I love the first one, but this one kind of, I saw the issues with it more, but I also felt more invested in it. I guess because like there's just more to work with. You got more material. And I am so excited for the next one. Like, because I feel like then that's when we're gonna get like the juicy stuff. Because right now we're getting like, it's like it was set up and then it was spectacle. And now I feel like we're gonna get, not that this isn't substantive, but I mean like deeply substantive in the next one. The next two books, like Dune Messiah, Children of Dune, and God Emperor. Like, I have to read God Emperor. I've read the other two. Like, those are some freaky books. Like, it gets super weird. And I'm ready for it to get weird. Like, I don't want them to Hollywood sanitize it. Like, I want them to be as strange as possible because that's what I want. Like, I need them to go full crazy in these next two. I don't know if he's gonna keep directing them. I think he's gonna end it with the next one, but like whoever takes over, just go weird.
Yeah.
Go more weird. that's my wrap up.
I mean, I was like reading up more about how the process for this movie. I think at one point David Lynch was planning to actually do a Dune series back in the 80s and stuff like that. I don't know, like he's like a weird, like if anybody's watched Twin Peaks and stuff like that, he's a really surrealist, you know, he does a lot of dreamlike stuff with his movies. I don't know if a lot of people will fit or enjoy his take on continuing the Dune franchise after Denny, because I like David Lynch. I'm okay with his directorial style and his projects, but I know for a lot of people that would probably be an awkwardness, mm-hmm. you know, dealing with it. Like, had they established, okay, Denny Villeneuve's going to do the first one, another director's going to do the third, the second one, and so on and so forth, maybe people wouldn't be as jarring if Lynch did decide to continue it, if he chooses to. But yeah, that's my take on it.
I want someone who knows how to work on the same scale as Denis, like who knows how to make those type of movies, but also is going to be super strange. I think Yorgos Lanthimos would actually be kind of cool if he did the next couple ones. Because, I don't know, that to me would be weird. And he'll lean into it. So I'm like, I think that would be cool. I don't think he'll do it, but, you know.
You would have to get like a European, or when I say European, I mean like a Dutch or German director to can shoot on that scale, but also embrace the craziness of what's happening, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, that's Dune.
So yeah, of course, you know, it's the first episode of the month of March. Whoop whoop. So I'm just gonna briefly go over some box office stuff. Of course, I'm going to go over the top 10 of last month. Bear in mind, some of these movies are still currently in theaters, so the numbers probably won't be accurate based on the release date. But of course, number 10 was Mean Girls. It made about about $72 million from its release between January 12th to the end of the month. Demon Slayer was released, of course, February 23rd. So far, it's only made about $15 million as of the start of the month, or the end of the month. The Chosen series, the first three episodes, I guess, is also playing in fandom events in theaters. It was released February 1st. It made about $13 million so far. Anyone But You, the rom-com featuring Glenn Powell and Sydney Sweeney, was released December 22nd. That movie so far as of end of the month has made about $90 million. Of course, we're going to be talking about Timothée Chalamet in Wonka. It released December 15th. And so far as of leaving the box office, it made about $216 million. So far wrapping up the month. Migration, Universal Pictures animated movie, made about $124 million. The Beekeeper with Jason Statham made $64 million. Madam Web at $3 million, total gross $40 million. And these are all, I'm saying the total gross, but I'm also giving you guys the ranks where they are for the month. And for number two for last month was Argylle. Total gross it made so far as of from releasing February 2nd was $43 million. And the number one movie of last month was Bob Marley One Love. It's total gross right now since February 14th was $82 million. So these are the movies that were released within the month. Some started earlier, some started later, and those are the rankings. Mean Girls at 10, Demon Slayer at 9, Chosen at 8, Anyone But You at 7, Wonka at 6, Migration at 5, Beekeeper at 4, Madam Web at 3, Argylle at 2, and Bob Marley at 1. And those are the domestic box office earnings mentioned of the movie so far. Well, total gross so far. So yeah.
Hey, so let's talk about our first story. How is this pronounced? Because I want to say, I'm about to like name all the letters, but is it?
You can might as well name all the letters. Name all the letters.
Okay. IATSE. And Teamsters leaders rally members of crew unions before the AMPTP talks begin, saying if we don't get what we want, we will shut it down. So they had a unity rally in Encino, California today, and that the negotiations are going to start on Monday. between them, the Teamsters Local 399, and the Hollywood Basic Crafts with the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers. And so this is like hundreds of workers from all facets of below the line community, from electrical workers,
your grips, your stage hands, your craftspeople, you know, all the people who, when the credits roll, they get like three columns and it's just endless names. All those people, and also including, I think one IASI local, I think California has also included. I don't think it's all, I'm not sure, but I think VFX artists are also included as well. So it's a lot of people
involved. Editors, costumers, script supervisors, So I did not know that the contract was coming up this year. It would be insane if there was another strike this summer, but, you know, hopefully the producers learned their lesson from last year.
I mean, it was mentioned when the WGA, the Writers Guild, and SAG-AFTRA was striking. One of the primary things a lot of the union people were mentioning was that, remember, if they get their deal, our contract ends either June, July. So, you know, and there was always a constant reminder of, you know, they stood by us when we had our initial negotiations, like SAG-AFTRA and WGA, and we're supporting them, but hopefully they remember to support us as well when it's our turn. And a lot of people weren't paying attention, because if you were aware of this industry, you knew like all the unions that were gearing up for their strikes were around the same time. The only reason why IASI and the Teamsters didn't strike was because, like I said, their contract isn't really up until June. If you were involved, or anybody went to any of the strikes and stuff, I know the Atlanta headquarters, the IOSC Local Atlanta, their building, their office, you know, was used as a meeting location for the strikes for the SAG-AFTRA members and the WGA members who live in Metro Atlanta, to meet before they rallied around the city at over at Turner and not CBS, but CNN. So, next up is a big one. Apparently, there's like a very big issue happening right now at Disney. They're battling for board positions. And of course, the grandchildren of Walt and Roy Disney are getting involved in supporting Bob Iger for his seat with Nelson Peltz. They sent a letter in to shareholders, and they mentioned they're kind of against Disney's recent practices, which some were also implemented by Bob, but they're vehemently not for Nelson Peltz being involved or becoming the CEO potentially if that decision is made. Nelson Peltz is also the chairman of the board of directors for Wendy's, which is ironic enough because Wendy's also said, hey, we're going to do surge pricing, where the pricing of changes food based on Uber and Lyft and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know how it's going to turn out for Disney, because the last couple of years they've been doing some kind of weird stuff. But I guess their family's belief is that this guy, as much as Roy is kind of messing up stuff, this guy Nelson Peltz is not up to standard up stuff and in line what the family stands for, especially considering that he was also a supporter of Ron DeSantis' campaign for presidency, and Disney and Ron DeSantis as governor of Florida have been going back and forth for the last couple of years, but still. So I think that also played a major factor in their decision to back Bob Iger.
Oh boy, that would be getting a read. Okay, so let's talk about what we've watched this week.
I haven't had a chance to watch anything. Like I said, watched Dune during the week. So that's my major watch. Looking forward to, like I said before, going to rewatch the first one this night as soon as we press end on recording to rewatch the first one. But yeah, that's mostly it for me. Dune, just Dune.
That's what's on your mind. Yeah, I didn't finish watching anything. I feel like this week was like crazy, but I started watching The Souvenir Part 1 by Joanna Hogg. So that's interesting. One thing about her is that she doesn't write scripts. So like none of the actors have scripts. Like they're improvising mostly, which is that's kind of crazy to do for an entire movie or to do through most of your movies. That's really interesting. So Tilda Swinton's in it. So I'm vibing. I'm gonna finish it and see what I think. But like, yeah, so far it's interesting. I like it. And I haven't watched a whole bunch of like, I did start watching the first Dune by David, like the original one. Was it David Lynch who made that one? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I started watching it and then I got halfway and I was like, I can't watch this anymore. But like, because it's crazy. But I've been watching a lot of Dune content in terms of like the interviews with all of the girls and the guys, the Spice Babies. Like, that's been fun, kind of. Yeah, I've kind of enjoyed that. They're not giving like Stranger Things, like Twilight, We Love Each Other castmate vibes, but they're giving like, we're all professionals and we're just doing our job kind of vibes. But
yeah,
it's so interesting to kind of watch it. So
yeah.
All right, well, that is it for us this week. We hope that you're doing well. Make sure to check out all of our social media. Support us if you can. And we will see you guys in the next episode. Goodbye.
Au revoir.